Hi everyone, I'm P. Renada. You're listening to Seat of Power, Rappler's podcast about the Philippine presidency. For today's episode, we have with us Professor Herman Kraft, who is the chairman of the Department of Political Science for the University of the Philippines. And he's here to help us understand the latest remarks from President Rodrigo Duterte about the Visiting Forces Agreement. Are his remarks a part of a negotiating tactic? Or is this just a rash outburst from a president who has long harbored a grudge against the United States of America? Listen in on our conversation. Thank you so much, Sir Herman, for accepting our invitation to join our podcast and helping us dissect this very interesting issue coming from Malacañang.
So, well, thanks for having me.
Yes, this is very exciting topic, especially because we know that the Visiting Forces Agreement is only supposed to last this year, specifically until August 9, because of the process of termination which the Duterte administration began a year ago and suspended twice. Now, unless ma suspend ulit, we're going to see the VFA end this year in the next coming months. So, Siguro just a recap no, on why we're having this episode. In the span of 2 months, the president has made two conditions for the VFA to continue, right? So last December 26, he said that it could only push through if the US will give vaccines to the Philippines. So COVID-19 vaccines, a very, very hot topic, urgently needed good right now. And then just a few days ago, February 12, Duterte again made another condition. This time, he asked for payment for American troops to be in the Philippines. So, kailangan magbayad kayo kung gusto niyo magpatuloy yung VFA. So, this comes as negotiations are taking place before the VFA is terminated on August 9. So, that is basically like the cloud looming over the US and the Philippines now. So, I guess to start off, because we have this event coming up soon, maybe we can begin by explaining to our listeners, firstly, what is the Visiting Forces Agreement and why is it so important to the Philippines?
Okay. The Visiting Forces Agreement should be seen as an agreement that is not a standalone agreement. It's actually something that is connected to the Mutual Defense Treaty. No? And the reason why it was contracted, if you will, no, between the Philippines and the United States was in the aftermath of the closure of the bases, the American bases, no, in the Philippines. No? So that's Clark, Subic, no, and other smaller installations, no, in the early 1990s. One of the issues that actually came out was in the context of the Mutual Defense Treaty, which was still in effect, even as the military base agreement had already expired, the Philippines and the United States still continued to hold regular military exercises. The problem there is that before, when these exercises were actually conducted, the legal personalities of the American servicemen who were actually part of or participating in the exercises was covered by the provisions in the military bases agreement, right? But once the MBA was no longer in place, then their legal personalities, when they're in the Philippines, is actually non-existent, so to speak, no? Walang, there's no document that actually specifies what kind of legal personality they have, which basically means, which is all about the idea of what happens to them, right? If they're involved in a criminal or a civil case, no, in the Philippines while they're here in the context of the exercises that they're actually participating in, no, and so because of that that gap, that lacuna, if you will, no, in the law, it became necessary for the Philippines and the United States to actually negotiate some sort of agreement that would cover that, right? And that's what the Visiting Forces Agreement is all about. So it's important to the extent that it allows American servicemen to have some sort of legal personality when they actually are in the Philippines, you know, in the context of exercises that or whatever, they can be military exercises, they can be participating in a conference or whatever. It covers them in that sense. So actually, if you think about it, the VFA is actually for their protection when they're in the Philippines, right? That's one of the most important aspects of the VFA, that this is about the protection of American servicemen in the Philippines. Otherwise, they're very vulnerable to, you know, to issues that have to do with criminal activity, you know, and so on. So there's something. One could make the argument that it's in both the interest of the United States and the Philippines. Because from our side, well, if we want exercises to continue, if we want to have these kinds of engagements with the American military, you know, then we'd better make sure that they're protected legally when they actually come to the Philippines. So that was the reason why we had the VFA. You know? And it's very much connected to the idea of the Mutual Defense Treaty. Now, as a second part of this is when we actually signed the Expanded Defense Cooperation Agreement with the United States, no, the essential element of which is that the American forces would be allowed to go on rotational deployment in different parts of the Philippines, no. So we're talking about U.S. Air Force jets, for instance, being in Cebu or in Palawan, no, or the U.S. Navy actually passing through. That kind of agreement, which again, para sa atin, it's actually important because it's part of the reassurance about American support for us in the event of emergencies, right? Then again, the VFA plays a very important role there, because if they're going to be on rotational deployment, the VFA covers the legal aspects, no, of the protections, no, and coverage, no, for American servicemen who are actually in the Philippines. No, we might frame it also in ways that we're clear about legal jurisdictions, no, that it's an exercise of our sovereignty, no, that we assert our laws, no, as far as American servicemen who are actually in the Philippines, no. So there's that, you know, it's really trying to cover some sort of potential loophole, no, that was created by the expiration of the military bases agreement in the early 90s.
So, sir, if let's say the VFA does end, right, and mawawala na yung legal cover that you said, yeah, it provides, if American soldiers were to come to the Philippines after that, if we wanted them to come here for exercises or other activities, paano, we would need to, how would we then facilitate their entry here without the VFA?
That's a problem. Kasi ang ano nun, normally for it's an immigration issue. Right, so parang it's like if you're going through the airport, no, or sabihin natin through a ship, no, dadaan ka sa immigration, customs, no, and that means you're going to have to show that you have a visa, etc., right? So parang ang ano nun is, instead of that visa, ito yung document that actually covers the visa, so we don't have to actually, kasi isipin mo na lang the inconvenience of it all, right? Parang if you've got American servicemen coming here and just one aircraft carrier, for instance, passing by, might have as many as 6,000 ship-bound servicemen, right? No, so biruin mo yan, that's 6,000 visas that you have to actually process. No, in other words, it's the inconvenience of actually dealing with that. With one document, you cover all of these kinds of things. No, so parang the question now is that. I think the point that your question is based on is going to be important. So ano ngayon yung legal protections na meron sila, no, and how on our part, no, how can we make assertions about the fact that, no, our laws are actually that they're obliged to actually follow our laws, for instance, right? So there's that kind of thing that's problematic, no, which might mean that you might find it's like what happened after 19 after the MBA was actually had actually expired, no. Initially we had exercises, and then we realized that we had that problem as far as the legal personalities of American servicemen engaged in in exercises here, no? Bigla nang wala, no? Parang the exercises were discontinued for several years. So parang that's one of the costs, if you will, no, to us, no? Parang we won't be able to have them here exercising with us, which I think the Armed Forces of the Philippines actually appreciates very much because it contributes to their preparedness, no, and their ability to work with the Americans as allies, no. So parang kumbaga wala, parang rin, you're actually reducing the learning curve as far as working with them, no, in military situations, right, with those kinds of exercises, no. So SOPs are actually settled, no, through those exercises, no, so that you don't have to deal with it, no, when the emergency is already here.
So, for example, I remember si Foreign Secretary Albert De Rosario saying that during the time of Super Typhoon Yolanda, when other countries were scrambling to, you know, bring us aid and assistance mm-hmm. through maybe their military, the U.S., because of the VFA, was actually able to send troops much faster and, in fact, right. Was able to evacuate like 21,000 Filipinos from the flood-prone area. So, I guess this is one concrete illustration of how the VFA facilitated like some sort of assistance that benefited Filipinos.
Exactly. Although, of course, in those kinds of situations, the advantage of the VFA was that immediately the Americans could come in. No, of course, other countries doing the same thing, pwedeng i-wave yung ano. I mean, it's really a policy question, no. But you're right. Precisely because you didn't have to go through the bureaucratic rigmarole of having to ask for a waiver of ano, of visas and things like that, no. The U.S. Armed Forces could very quickly send their troops in, you know, with very very little time gaps, you know, as far as reacting to the situation is actually concerned.
Okay, let's move on to what the president actually said recently, right? So he was saying that he will allow soldiers, American soldiers, to enter the Philippines, but U.S. will have to pay for their presence. So the problem here, though, was that he was very vague about the statement. He left it at that, walang details. And then even the next days and the following days after, when kami in the Malacanang press corps would ask presidential spokesman Harry Roque, what did the president mean? What exactly is payment? Does it constitute like maybe just a donation of COVID-19 vaccines? Is it cold cash, or is it like, I know, like maybe a military program that would benefit Filipino soldiers? So till now, he has been very vague about it. There's been no details, no plan whatsoever. And when I asked Secretary Roque, did the president even consult Secretary Lorenzana or Secretary Loxon about this payment plan, kuno? And then all he could say was, the president doesn't have to. So again, may lack of certainty, like, you're not even sure if he consulted them, but you're just saying that if he didn't, it's okay. But the problem is, yun nga, it would be Secretary Lorenzana and Secretary Loxon who would have to be implementing or dealing with the implications of a VFA, of a terminated VFA. So just siguro to give context to our listeners, when the president asks for payment, is this an unusual thing for a country to demand payment from another country for that country's soldiers to be in their country?
Okay. When the president made that kind of statement, it sort of brought me back to the days of the military base agreement. No, I'm not sure if you were still familiar with what's going on at that time. Pero ang ano kasi nun is that the last time there were a number of negotiations that took place from the Marcos era up to the last time with the Aquino administration, no, on terms that pertain to American assistance that would be given to the Philippines, no, which the Americans wanted to frame as something that was completely separate from the military business agreement, but for the Philippines was connected. Right, so in other words, that's where you had this debate over rent, right? That is to say that Americans were paying rent for their use of Subic and Clark, right? The Americans refused to use that same language, kasi para sa kanila, aliado tayo eh. We're allies, right? And as allies, we shouldn't be asked to pay rent, no, for the use of facilities, no, which actually supports both our interests, right? So American U.S. Air Force jets that are actually based in Clark, for instance, protected Philippine airspace, right? So parang may ganong klaseng discussion, no, over language. Now, of course, in the end, no, as far as that kind of discussion is actually concerned, no, the Americans, of course, increased the amount of assistance that they were providing the Philippines, no, and this was in the form of military assistance, no, as well as economic assistance, no, to the Philippines, no, that was actually quite fascinating in the sense of what it covered, no, but that was like I said, since the decision to actually provide that assistance to the Philippines was always coming at the time when we were negotiating, no, reviewing the military base agreement, there was always this sense magkaduktong yung dalawa, no, that these are actually connected to one another. Now, why is this story somehow pertinent to what President Duterte is actually saying? Kasi a similar argument that was being made by the Philippines back then, no, was that you are using very large bases here in the Philippines, no, huge hectareage that you're actually using in Subic and in Clark, right? And yet you're giving us pittance, no, for rent compared to other countries, no, that are recipients of your assistance, Egypt, Israel, Pakistan was also. So parang kumbaga, the same kind of argument that you're hearing now was already being made back then, right? So when a comparison about how much Pakistan has actually received in terms of counterterrorism assistance, no, from the Philippines, from the United States, no, and they're saying that they're receiving, no, four times, no, what we are actually being given. Right, so when that kind of language comes in, it reminds me of that particular discussion that was actually going on, or that negotiation that was going on before. So what does that tell me? No, this somehow brings me back to the idea, no, of what we've all been saying, that President Duterte's geopolitics is a Cold War geopolitics, right? So kubaga, his framing of things still goes back to, no, those days when I guess he was much more familiar and he was much more engaged, no, either as a law student or as a young politician in Davao, no, with what was actually going on in terms of Philippine-US relations. So if one were to speculate what it is that the president meant, no, what was he talking about, no, one could think about it in those terms, right? The kinds of assistance that the United States was actually providing, no, now you can put it into the context of today's issues, no, that part of it might actually have to do with COVID, the assistance in terms of access to COVID vaccinations, no, but it goes back to that kind of thinking, right? That somehow the United States owes the Philippines something. My question actually for that, no, is when you're asking for payment, no, in the language that he's actually using, no, the question that comes up is, well, what exactly is it that they are paying for, right? I'm not sure, no, because we're so focused on the idea of the Americans paying us, right, that we're not really raising the question of, well, okay, they're paying us for what, right? And actually, I'm actually much more concerned about the idea of them paying, because if they do accept that this is payment for something, diba, it's like renting an apartment, eh, no? Somebody who rents an apartment can go to the landlord or landlady and say, look, I want changes in how the apartment looks like, no? Because the faucets are not working, no? The the windows, you know, give me bad, you know, bad lighting and bad ventilation, you know, that kind of thing. So parang if we're asking them to pay, does that mean that they can actually make demands, right? As part of that negotiation regarding payment, no? Mas kinakabahan ako doon sa punto na yun. Kasi nga, hindi naman natin sinasabi ano yung binabayaran. The language that the president is using, no, because it's very vague, seems to actually connect the VFA to the payment. So it's the very notion of the VFA itself that they are actually paying for, right? So that's the thing there. You know, parang if you think about it, some clarity in language, no, which we might be problematic about, no, as far as what exactly is it that we're asking? What it's not so much well, on one hand we're actually wondering what exactly is it that we think the president is asking for, right? In payment. Because the other side of it is, if the Americans are paying, what are they paying for, right? So there's that question that has to be asked. And like I said, it seems to me that the language that we're seeing as far as Malacanang declarations are actually being made, no, is that the Americans are paying for the VFA itself, right? Which is interesting, precisely because the VFA is supposed to be a mutually beneficial agreement, no, that both parties, no, somehow see value in it. Now, if we're going to reduce it to a transactional arrangement, no, then we're actually sending the signal, walang value sa amin yung ano, except for what you're paying for, right? That seems to be what it means, no, for us now. And I suspect, I mean, I just read this morning about General Sobihana's statement, no, wherein he was typical of, no, of the Armed Forces of the Philippines, no, wherein he was actually saying that, of course, the Commander in Chief, when he says something, no, ano kami don? That's what we're actually going to follow, no. But the Armed Forces of the Philippines is the principal beneficiary of this relationship that we have with the United States, right? So in other words, if we're asking them to pay, no, does that mean that all of these other things that the Armed Forces of the Philippines are already benefiting for right now, no, exchange programs, no, when there are exercises, the things that the Americans leave here, no, for which the Armed Forces can use, no, lahat ba yan mawawala na? Because all of a sudden, it's a transactional arrangement, no? So there are those kinds of things, no? And I think precisely because it is so vague, no, the best thing that we could say about it is that maybe it is a negotiating tactic, right? That he drops all of these bombs, no, just to send a signal to the Americans that, look, you know, you'd better treat us right, no? So that... If you want these negotiations to end right, no, then there are certain things that you might have to take into consideration. I hope that's what it means, no, as opposed to the worst case scenario wherein we're thinking that, you know, President Duterte really doesn't want the Americans here, and as much as possible, he's trying to wean the Philippines away from dependency on the United States, no, and the VFA seems to be the most obvious starting point, no, as far as that winning process is actually concerned.
What does it mean, sir, that the president had to say it in public? Because you mentioned already that previous administrations have already told America that, A, we need more aid from you, that if you want to continue this agreement, we need more aid. So, and then America naman would bite. They would provide more assistance, maybe not call it payment, but they would, diba, like, provide something to say that, A, we're complying
helping
with
you.
Request. Yeah, we're helping you. So, but they didn't have to do that in public, right? I don't think I've heard,
right.
Has there been a president who publicly demanded payment like the president currently?
The language has always been different, right? Parang ang ano la, the recent ano, if you're talking about post post basis, right? The language has never been used. I'm not familiar with any time at all that the president, the sitting president, no, or the administration in power, no, ever said anything that hinted at demanding payment, no, or an increase in assistance, no, from the United States, no. That language was only something that I remember hearing at the time when the basis agreement was actually in place. So, kumbaga, it was a real estate transaction, right? You're using this, ano, this real estate, no? Kaya nga parang it's rent, eh. Yun yung ano talaga noon, no? You're paying rent for the use of this, which of course the Americans never wanted to use, no? Because it meant the whole thing was just transactional, right? It reduces the alliance or the importance of the alliance, no? So in other words, it's not, I wouldn't say it's actually new, but at, I mean the language used by President Duterte, but at the same time, in recent times, no, recent as in ever since President Aquino, no, actually President Aquino is interesting kasi she did use that language, or her administration.
This is Cory.
Yeah, it's Cory. No, sorry. They did use that language, but because we were still looking at, or we were still negotiating, or we were still reviewing the military bases agreement, right? So, kumbaga, the language was still connected to, no, the military bases agreement, no, and in fact, parang the extension. That the Senate actually shut down, right, in 92, the extension of the, or the renewal of the military base agreement, no, may ganun na ring arrangement in terms of what was it that the United States would actually provide in terms of assistance, no, and so on, right? But of course, all of that went down the drain because the Senate decided, no, we were not going to continue with the basis agreement. But like I said, the Cory administration, I think, was unique among the post-Marcos administrations in terms of this kind of language of demanding, or at least being more explicit about the idea of American assistance to the Philippines, precisely because you still had the bases during that time. Once the bases were gone, that language disappeared in terms of how we dealt with the Americans. So this is the first time that we're actually hearing it again, as far as, so in other words, there might have been some signals to the Americans that, look, you might want to give us a little bit more. But this was never done as a public, exercise, right? Unlike what you're actually hearing from President Duterte now.
So it seems that there's an element of PR, right? Public relations and spectacle to this move of Duterte's. And this is not the first time that he's publicly castigated the U.S. But ever since he, even during his campaign, he kept talking about the massacre during World War II. Right. The colonial period.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Actually, the Buddaho massacre, right? Was the one that he mentioned. That's in Mindanao. Yeah.
Saka ever since he was a mayor, he was already saying, I will never allow American soldiers in Davao City. Marami siyang ganun. Yeah, so, yeah. And then to add to that, Obama criticizing him for his drug war, and then yung the purchase of rifles that were stopped by the Senate because of the drug war concerns. And then, of course, the last straw, apparently, for Duterte was when Senator Bato de la Rosa's visa was canceled.
That's right.
So, parang compounding. I guess that's what he wants to show, that parang nasobrahan na siya, masyado nang bastos ang America in his eyes, and that's why he is now using the VFA as his kind of get back at the States for this. But my question is, the way that Malacanang explains the president's demand for payment is, it's just right to demand the payment, because anyway, the Philippines is absorbing the risk of being an ally of America's because we have this agreement. Now, the enemies of the United States can feel free to bomb us, and that's why we deserve compensation. Rocky's word was compensation for this risk. So I just want to ask, what do you think of this defense of that demand for payment? Is it right? Is it something that is considered in when you hash out agreements like this?
Well, when you're negotiating, of course, you take extreme positions, right? Lagi naman, that's always how it actually works out. But what I find interesting, again, no, is that this is language that was actually present during the Bases era, right? So in other words, you had, I can remember, not that I can remember. I remember reading about Senator Recto's criticism of our agreement with the United States about them having bases here because they are magnets, no, to attacks from the foreign enemy, the enemies of the United States that we will be involved in. No, but this was again during the time of the Cold War, right? So a large part of the criticism about being in entangled, no, in American conflicts, for instance, no, and which was the risk that we were taking as being in terms of being an ally, was again connected very much to the idea of the bases being here. There's something tangible, right, in terms of what that risk was all about. That's the funny part about this particular, the way Malacanang is framing things right now, right? Because we are allies. Whether or not the BFA is there, we are an ally of the United States, right? So this question of taking a risk, no, in the idea of being an ally of the United States is again going back to that language during the Cold War, during the Bases era, which is really funny because just a few years ago, right, our main concern was the Americans weren't doing enough in terms of reassuring us that they will support us whenever in the event that we're going to have a problem in our relations with China, right? So now this is very much language that is at the opposite end of, right? Parang dati ang concern natin, we're not feeling, no, your support, di ba? Yung ano natin sa kanila, no? Our concern was that if we have a problem with China over the West Philippine Sea, we're not really sure of what the Americans will actually do. Now we're suddenly saying na we're taking all the risks, no, parang yun yung isang ano natin. So parang the question again that has to be taken into consideration here, no, is that, like I said, there's a range of ways by which we can actually try to interpret what it is that President Duterte is trying to achieve, no, ranging from the idea that this is a negotiating tactic, right? So in other words, we're trying to get as much as we can, no, as far as negotiating with the Americans regarding the visiting forces agreement. Okay. And so saying all of these things is part of the performative politics that takes place, no, as a way of signaling, no, give us something more, no. But at the same time, if we actually take a look at the history of President Duterte in the way that he deals with the United States, no, you're not really too sure about whether this is just a negotiating tactic, right? So in other words, you know that he is has really strong antipathy as far as the United States is concerned. So you're now wondering if these are some of the steps he's escalating, those steps, so that in the end, you know, our relationship with the United States actually gets weakened. No, in other words, trying to work out a situation where the VFA or negotiating the VFA is a non, is no longer something that we can actually support, no, us, no, means that he's really taking those steps that will actually weaken the institutional links, no, between, broadly speaking, the Philippines and the United States, but more specifically, no, the institutionalized links, no, between the Philippine military, no, and the American and the United States military. No, I still think that the institution in the Philippines that is strongly in favor of continuing and strengthening our relationship with the United States is the Armed Forces of the Philippines, right? And so in this case, you know, the president is actually trying to initiate certain actions, no, that tries to weaken, no. You may talk about it in terms of trying to push forward our independent foreign policy by lessening our dependence on the United States, but dependence on the United States really translates into, you know, that relationship between the armed forces and the and the U.S. Armed forces, right? So you can take it any way that you will, you know, in terms of those ranges. My own sense is that given his history, I think he's less interested in continuing the BFA than he is in actually trying to see a way by which the armed forces might understand why he wants them to be less dependent on the United States.
Okay, so your last few questions. Sure. Another way of looking at this, kasi, is the president is not in the same position he was when he first threatened to scrap the VFA. Because in January 2020, diba, wala pang COVID, and then the main issues there were the volcano eruption, ganun ganun. So, but fast forward to when he first suspended, right? Like, nagka pandemic, and then he decided to suspend the process, to press pause on the process of termination. And Loxin himself said that it could have been the pandemic that this made him do that. So what it could it be that by suspending the termination, by pressing pause on that process, he gained leverage? Because now he can say na, you know, you can only terminate the VFA once. And once you do that, wala ka ng leverage. But kumbaga parang he prolonged the time that he had to negotiate aid, assistance, cash, even maybe vaccines for the Philippines. Do you think that he could be thinking in the strategic way? And will it work if you're an American, if you're from the U.S. government? Would you bite?
Well, let's put it this way. Our relationship with the United States has been, I guess the point that I'm going to make is this. It has been easier for us, I think, to get concessions from the Americans, you know, if we are straightforward with them in terms of what it is that we would like them to do for us, so to speak, you know, rather than threatening them, right? That's the point there. If he's being strategic here, then the question is, does the method actually match the strategy, right? In other words, if the idea is to try to get more concessions from the United States, to make them understand that we need their assistance as far as COVID vaccines are actually concerned, which Malacanang said, right, that this is about trying to get support as far as COVID COVID vaccines are actually concerned. And the other thing was, of course, he did say geopolitics, right? That the situation in the regional environment was becoming so unpredictable that this was not the time to actually push the termination of the VFA, which is actually quite fascinating if you think about it. No, kasi parang, the geopolitical situation is not going to change just because COVID is gone, right? That's in fact one of the continuing realities that the Duterte administration has to actually contend with, which means that the VFA, I think, has less to do with the. It's difficult to actually see him acting on the VFA just because the situation has become less predictable, right? Because that's a continuing thing. Okay, so having said that, the question is, the question you're asking is, okay, is he acting strategically? Is this something that there's something strategic, you know, in the way that he's actually calculating, you know, using the VFA as some sort of leverage, you know? And the problem there is that if you want as an outcome, you know, vaccines, you know, or at least support as far as vaccines are actually concerned, the idea of finding a much more stable, predictable regional environment, no? Then threatening the United States, no, with the termination of the VFA isn't exactly the most effective way of getting those kinds of outcomes, right? So if we're talking about leverage and we're talking about strategic, you know, there's some sort of disjoint as far as the way I look at it. Now, there's some sort of disjoint between the method of that he's actually using, you know, with the kinds of outcomes that they say they want to achieve, you know, in the way that they're they're using this kind of language, you know, in dealing with the Americans. That's the problem that I have with the whole thing. There's some sort of discongruence, you know, as far as method and outcome is actually concerned. No. Unless ang iniisip niya, I remember at one point in time he was actually saying that ba to mga Amerikano murahin mo mas lalo ka pang babayaran. But I pero nahihirapan ako. It's very difficult for me to think that that is now the way he's framing, no, how to negotiate with the United States, right? So that's for me that for me is the problem, no, in attributing some sort of strategic genius to this and to this process right now, no. I maybe it's me, but I can't see how we can actually say that we can get the outcome that he wants, that he claims he wants, no, through the kind of method that he's actually using in terms of trying to get those outcomes.
Last question, sir. What does it mean for the United States' longest military ally in Asia to be making these threats in public, to be parang putting this very important agreement on the line, to how this relationship is perceived by the international community, most especially by the dominant power in the region, China, which we know, of course, the U.S. is seeking to go head-to-head and it balance its power, its incursions in, for example, the South China Sea. When China sees this playing out, the Duterte's threats, the VFA in danger, what does it mean to China? What does it tell China? And what could that possibly make China do given this situation?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Because the way I see it, I think much more than the United States, I see Duterte, personally speaking, no, I mean, he himself, as playing to China, right? In other words, the performative aspect of what he's doing, no, doing this in public, it's signaling to China that, see, right, I want to be your friend, I want to continue to be your friend, no, and despite the fact that I'm unable to actually distance the Philippines, no, from the United States, no, it doesn't mean that I can take the initial steps towards that, right? It's actually because he doesn't have to do it in public. That's the point, right? So doing it in public means that signals are being sent all over the place, right? And I think if there is an audience that he is playing to, it's China, right? It's not other countries around the region. He doesn't care about what Japan thinks. He doesn't care about ASEAN, much less ASEAN, no, and our ASEAN neighbors. No, he is playing to China as the principal audience for this public performance, no. Dati-rate, and this is the interesting part, dati-rate kasi, whenever Philippine presidential administrations played out these kinds of things in public, and mind you, I think maybe my memory has actually mellowed, no, but it has never been as vicious, no, as the way that the Duterte administration actually plays its public performance, no. But you did have that in the past, especially during the basis reviews and negotiations, no? But during that time, the audience was the United States and the Philippine public, right? Yung audience mo. It was never some other, ano. In fact, other countries, no, around the region privately always sent us the signal, you know, it's a good thing for the Americans to stay here, right? Parang we're in favor of them continuing to have those bases in the Philippines. No? But actually, whenever you had those public spectacles, no, yun nga, limitado kung sino yung audience mo. Ngayon, all of a sudden, it's not just the United States that we're playing to, it's actually China as well, right? And I think in this case, the interesting thing about, and the question here is, how much is President Duterte actually playing to a domestic audience, not the Philippine public, right? But the domestic audience is actually the Philippine military, right? Because you're now talking about the idea that, well, it's the Philippine military which has always sent its signals, no, that it is in favor of continuing the relationship, to be nice about it, no, to continue the relationship with the United States. And I think to a certain extent, Department of Foreign Affairs tends to actually send that same signal as well. No, that's why, that explains why Secretary Loxin tends to blow hot and cold, no, in the way that he talks to, about the relationship with the United States, right? Sometimes very critical, but then sometimes he's actually in favor. He says something nice as far as the relationship is concerned. So in other words, the bureaucracy is still very much in favor of the relationship with the United States. And it's this part of the bureaucracy that President Duterte wants on his side, right? So that's one aspect of the whole performance. So kumbaga, he's playing to a domestic audience, no, signaling to them that, no, we can get better, right? A better relationship with somebody who's closer. And in fact, we need to get that a better relationship, no? So that's China basically that is. So you've got a three-part audience, so to speak, you know, that I think President Duterte is actually trying to play to. You know? The United States, you know, but the United States is less, I guess, as far as priorities are concerned. You know, the U.S. is probably his last priority in terms of trying to influence them. You know, but it's China and the domestic audience, in particular, you know, the armed forces that he's actually trying to influence, you know, force them to think about, you know, just how important or unimportant the VFA is.
Wow, okay, that was a lot to absorb. And, you know, it's only 6 months. Well, at least it's 6 months for the DFA and the DND to maybe wrap their minds around what the president wants. I mean, about August 9 is when the VFA is terminated. Uh-oh. So I'm sure very intense yung debate that will be happening leading up to that date. And yeah, what you just said really makes a lot of sense. And it is, you know, a lot is at stake when they go to the discussion table, the negotiating table, and diba, parang figure out what form of payment the president wants, what could, you know, like appease the Americans, but also appease the president. So I'm sure it will be intense when they talk.
One thing that's interesting that's going on or not going on right now is you're not hearing anything from the Americans. They've not said anything, right?
Usually they would. Is it something that they would before automatic may reaction yan?
My ano yan, the ambassador would say something, no? And the range of things that the ambassador might say, no, might be from the point where he's going to react very strongly, no, to what it is that President Duterte is actually saying, or, you know, to try to tone things down, right? In other words, it's the Sung Kim approach to bilateral relations between the U.S. and the Philippines, right? So instead of directly butting heads with them, he'll say things so that it turns things around, right?
Temper the tension.
But now you're not hearing anything at all, right?
Yeah, because Ambassador Kim is no longer here, right? So actually, wala pang new ambassador. So maybe that's a factor.
It might be, but that says something about, of course, instructions coming from the State Department about how to actually deal with these kinds of statements coming from Malacañang, no? So it's actually quite fascinating that nagsasalita ngayon, wala pa silang Wala pa silang sinasabi, wala pa silang ginagawa.
Hula ko they're parang waiting kumbaga, for clarification, but because yeah. no one in the DFA or DND also knows what's going on, they also can't say what the yeah. president really thinks. So
Well, which is probably all for the better, right? Na parang no less talk, less mistake. Parang ganon yung ano doon eh.
Until they actually go That's to the right. discussion yeah. table, and hopefully the Philippine side will also be more prepared to answer their questions. Yeah. But we shall see.
That's the interesting part is the extent to which all of these discussions going on regarding the negotiations, no, seems to be disconnected, if you will, from the statements coming from Malacanang.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right? In other words, the negotiations are going on. Maybe part ng input ngayon is, sinabi ng presidente namin, you have to pay. No? So what is it that you can offer? So on and so forth. Pero yun nga, for the most part, I think the negotiation signals that we want this to succeed. Right? Whereas here's the president basically sending the signal na parang, I don't want it to succeed. I'm not really interested in the VFA actually getting through, right? So parang if you really want it to happen, no, you better pay. And what he's saying is the payment keeps on going up, right? Like mm-hmm. what you said at the start. We started with vaccines, right? Now we're talking about payment, no, that should match the $16 billion that Pakistan actually receives mm-hmm. from the United States, no? So parang tumataas ng tumataas yung ante, you know? What are we going to expect? A week from now, 2 weeks from now, tataas pa yan? There's something else that he's going to ask for, right? That's
right.
Isa na. Yeah.
Exciting. So thank you so much, Professor Kraft, for your time and again for giving us insight into this really complicated issue that goes, diba, like decades and decades ago. So many administrations have been involved in the VFA, in just the concept of Americans coming to the Philippines and, you know, working with their military. So much issues to parse from there. So thank you so much for joining us. And we hope our listeners also learned a lot from this session. Until the next Teeth of Power podcast episode, thank you for listening.